You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warwick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
So I'm proud that Mr. Landers invited us to bring this to the pump. We're going into our second year, and it has extended to an hour, and it's still plenty of time. We can spend an hour talking to you about addiction and recovery. Today I have a very interesting guest. You know, usually we talk about alcoholism, or we talk about meth addiction or crack cocaine addiction, and really when addiction takes us to the streets. My guest today is a young man that was in college and got started on opiates and then methadone, and the rest is history. So this will be an interesting story to hear today about a young person's demise due to his opiate addiction, Oxycontin, Lortab, Xanax. He'll share it all with you. I don't think we've had anyone on here yet that's talked about their addiction to the opiates, so this will be interesting. Addiction's the same no matter what the drug or drink is, but the course and the power of the compulsion to the drug might be different with different kinds of drugs, especially if it's pharmaceutical drugs. So I'm very happy to have Kenny B. come and share his story with you. Don't hesitate to call us and ask questions. Nothing's below the belt. We want you to learn. We want you to understand that there's hope and recovery possible. So if any of you have family members or siblings you're concerned about or taking even prescribed medications, call us. I'm sure Kenny or I will try to come up with some answers for you. So I'm going to be quiet and introduce you to Kenny and let you tell him his story. Hi, Kenny.
How's it
How
going?
How are you?
I'm doing good today.
You know, thanks for coming. I know you didn't feel good.
Yeah, it's been a little rough. The sinuses and the pollen and everything apparently has not been nice to me today. So
it says the whole community is hurting.
Everyone's got a stuffed up nose probably.
Right. Well, thanks for coming and being willing to share.
No problem. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us about you. I know you were born and raised. You come from Boonville High School. Yay,
yeah,
Warwick County.
I started off when I was, we moved down here in about when I was in about the third grade. I went to Chandler Elementary for a little bit, and then we moved to Boonville when I started going to junior high, and went to Boonville through all out my high school. I graduated in 2003 from Boonville High School with a grade point average, 3.0. So
great.
Yeah,
So studying was important to you.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I did. I don't like to say it as bragging, but I mean, I think I'm pretty fairly intellectual enough that, you know, I had the capability to be able to learn and pick up on things while I was going through school, just listening to teachers and everything that really helped, you know, to make it through without, you know, a lot of extra hard work to, you know, I mean, I achieved what I wanted to, got what I wanted from what I did, so.
Plus, you didn't add drugs to the high school curriculum.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I hadn't really had anything in that to kind of disrupt it, you know. And in high school, I did a lot of extracurricular activities. You know, I was in marching band for 4 years when I was in high school. I was in the drama group, you know, doing different things throughout that for my 4 years of high school. I actually tried to be on the swim team on my senior year, even though I only beat one person the whole time. I still tried. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's like I tried to at least, you know, occupy my time up through when I was in high school with just different things to kind of, you know, to have something to do throughout the days and stuff besides, you know, doing nothing.
Do you think that's important for high school kids?
I definitely think that's important. It's you know, it was a big thing in keeping me away from, you know, starting off on stuff like that. You know, it's because I mean, when you don't have time to do anything else, you know, it's like, and that was the thing that I liked, that I had enough extracurricular activities to, you know, hold everything off. That it's like, you know, I'd go to school and wouldn't get home till, you know, maybe 7-8 o'clock at night. But I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. That's what I like to do. I like to be, you know, active doing things. And you know, it's just my personality, so
keep busy.
Yeah, definitely. I like to keep busy. That's definitely a thing.
Yeah that seems a common trait.
Yeah, especially with things that I like to do, you know. That's what I found, you know, like I'm a percussionist. I like to play drums, and like I was at home and they let me play with every instrument that they got. I'm like, this is what I want to do.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I did that for a while.
So in high school, you knew what you were doing. You were involved in things. You were busy.
Yeah.
You have a twin brother and
I have a twin brother that went to school with me for a little bit, and you know he kind of dropped out a little bit on his little thing, doing what he was doing, and that was kind of a thing. Also, you know, I saw him start going down the wrong path early, and you know, was like, I don't want to do that. And it kind of helped, you know, reinforce some of the things that I was doing when I was going to school, was, you know, make sure and keep busy and don't start falling into that kind of path. And it was an awakening thing with him, you know, because I saw what was happening with him and was like, you know, that's not where I want to be right now. You know, it's like, I want to do what I'm doing. I like what I'm doing and I'm very good at it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, I wanted to keep on doing that. And, you know, cause I mean, it's like I said, it's like, I like being in the spotlight really. And so it's like, we're doing all this other stuff. It puts, you know, it's a lot of attention cause you know, you have people watching you doing what you're doing, whether it be competing or anything, you know, mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun. I'm not.
So, well, it's interesting how siblings react when the other sibling is drinking or drugging. You looked at your brother and said, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
And went the other direction for a while.
For a little bit, yeah. And then it turned off after that, you
right.
know. It's like, I mean, the thing that I think, like, I'd already, you know, my first couple of years of high school, I got kind of into a routine of things, of what I like to do, and I kind of stuck with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after high school, it's kind of like there's a big gap there, you know. It's like you just lose everything that you've been, you know, attached to for, like, 4 years, especially with, like, you know, because when I started everything, it was, like, my freshman year in high school, and then you kind of get used to a whole routine of everything throughout that 4 years, and then all of a sudden you're just like, you're done now, you graduated, either go to college or get a job, you know. And that was it, and it's kind of like a big letdown on things. It's like, well, where do I go now, you know?
So you didn't have a plan?
Not really. Like, I didn't have much of a plan at all. Like, I mean, I was like, I know I need to go to college, but I didn't put a lot of thought into it or a lot of effort really into what I really wanted to do. And so that was kind of a thing that, you know, I didn't know where I was going. I was just kind of like, well, whatever you say I got to do, I'm going to do. I don't know what I want to do, so.
So maybe that put you at a little risk graduating high school?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I didn't
kind
really.
Kind of started floating.
Yeah,
then.
I didn't have a plan for anything. I didn't have, you know, a mindset of where I wanted to take my life. You
mm-hmm.
know, I was just kind of like living in the moment of things, and all of a sudden it's just like, well, your moment's gone now. You have mm-hmm. nothing, you know, and you're just like, well, what do I do now, you know?
And you're 18, so you think
yeah.
you're an adult.
Exactly, 18, you know, don't have any bills, you know, still living with my parents. So it's like, oh, what do we do now?
Time for vacation.
Yeah, I was just off and running, really.
Yeah, so what happened then after that?
Well, after high school really is when, like, my starting of everything kind of came out. You know, it's I was, you know, I mean, I tried stuff a little bit when I was in high school. You know, I drank some on the weekends a little bit, maybe, you know, like tried pot a couple times, but really didn't start getting in depth with everything until, like, when I got out of high school. You know, I had an incident happen with, you know, a girlfriend that I had. And, like, throughout high school, she kind of, like, helped keep me level on things, you know, because, you know, she was involved in her church and everything. And so it's like, I was trying to be respectful, you know, and it was just, you know, she told me, she's like, it's okay to drink, but you're not going to do any drugs, you know. And that was kind of a mm-hmm. thing. I was like, you know, out of respect, okay, I'm not going to do that. But yet, you know, the idea was up there already.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a falling out whenever I got out of high school. And then it was just like, well, you know, I've been told I couldn't do this. And, you know, I want to. So now I'm going to see what it's all about. And, you know, I started off, you know, just smoking.
Curious.
Yeah, it's kind of more like it was. It's like, well, you know, what does this do, you know?
What's this forbidden fruit?
Exactly. And it's like I started smoking marijuana, you know. And it's like once you start that, you know, you get the effect of that. And you're just like, well, what does everything else do now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
you
like,
broke the taboo.
Yeah, it's like once you know, you try something, it's like, well, let me try this and see what that does, and just started, you know, trying a little bit of everything here and there just to see what I really liked, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, I had several different problems throughout things, you know, with different stuff that just, I mean, none of them really like stuck. The marijuana was a big thing that stuck for throughout pretty much everything that comes up in it.
Pot stayed the steady.
Yeah, that was a very steady thing that didn't go away through anything else. That's like, that was like the main thing out of anything else is that's always going to be there, but we're going to try to find everything else that we can too and just see what it does, you know? And I mean, I've experimented with everything that there is, you know, there's nothing that I hadn't tried, but when it came down to it, the main things that I liked is I like to be, you know, I like downers. I don't like to be up and running around and doing all that stuff. My thing came mainly with the downers, you know, it, regardless of how it was prescription wise, you know, it started off, you know, taking some Lortabs or something, you know, and it's like, hey, you know, I like this and that's what I want to try to keep doing was that, you know.
Are they really readily available?
I mean, to an extent, like you, as far as like, I mean, if you want to try to access just occasionally, you know, for experimental use, you can find somebody. That was never a problem, you know. As far as on a regular basis, it gets a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some good things because, you know, people that, I mean, because obviously if you want to use medications, you know, you have to find someone, one, who's willing to get rid of theirs to be able to have it. And, you know, a lot of people that I kind of ran into, you know, they had their own problems with it. So it's harder to, you know, get them to get rid of it for one. And then
they were doctor shopping for their own.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, I mean, I'm too young to be able to do that. So it's like you got to try to just meet different people. And it got a little difficult, but you know, if you got a will, you're
going
to find a way.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So began the opiate.
Yeah, like I mean, I've tried everything when I first got out of high school, and like it wasn't really like a big thing. Like I kind of floated around for like a year when I got out of high school and stuff. I'd caught a charge like. About 6 months after I gotten out of high school at my house and everything, and you know, was trying to figure out what I was going to do with all that and everything. And it's like, you know, I'd been kind of experimenting with a lot of other stuff, hadn't really, you know, started doing anything that was real serious with it and all that. And the main thing is like, I finally decided, I was like, well, you know, I'm going to start, you know, I'm trying to finish up this court case. I'm going to be getting on probation and everything. I know this. I either got to have a job or be doing something. And so I was like, that's when I decided. I was like, I'm going to go out to college, you know. And I went out to USI. And I was going to go out there for a little while and everything. And, you know, whenever I went out there, it was just like, you know, I got away from one area. And it was just like a whole new area and a whole new people that I could try, you know, and do what I wanted to. And that's when things like really started taking off, when I really started selling a lot of things and I started doing a lot of all this other stuff. And it just came up to the point finally where it was like, you know, people were coming over because I had something that they wanted, and they started were like, well, hey, will you trade this for what you have? And, you know, and we started doing that. And then one of my buddies was like, do you even know what you've been trading for this and everything? And I was like, no. And because I was trading Oxycontins for marijuana from someone. And the person, one of my other friends was like, have you ever tried one of these before? And I was like, no, I've never tried one of these before, you know? And he's like, well, you should sometime. And so I tried one for about 2.5 years.
One for two? So had you ever heard of OxyContin?
I'd heard of it, but never really, you know, not that much in depth about it. I hadn't really...
Not a lot of knowledge about it.
Yeah. The main thing that, whenever I started going out to school and everything, the main thing was the marijuana. That
right.
was the big thing that, you know, I was on at that point. And I didn't really, it's till I started, you know, I mean, I'd done a little bit of everything else, but nothing really else really ever stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I tried that, though, like, that was what I wanted.
There was instant
no questions.
Love.
Yeah, no questions asked. Like, the feeling that came with that was just like, okay, this is what it is, you know. And I mean, it's a very,
so
very
you immediately
thing.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And wanted it again and again and again and again.
And like I said, like it's kind of funny because I had somebody that, you know, had a prescription to it, pretty large prescription to it, you know, and with me selling marijuana, you know, I had something that they wanted.
Right.
And they're like, they were very willing to trade it. So it's like I had a very reliable
easy
source,
supply.
Yeah. To get it from. I mean, because they had, I mean, I think way too much for what they needed, you know, but I'm not a doctor, so.
Yeah.
But I mean, it made it very easy for me to be able to access that and get my hands on it and have that. And like I said, I tried it one day and then the next and then the next, and it was gone.
And Kenny, you
that.
Said you snorted it at first, 20 milligrams at a time.
Yeah. The first time I did it, I actually had a 40 and I broke it in half. And I took half of it. And then after like about an hour, I was like, I don't even need anymore. You know, I was walking around.
It's that powerful.
Yeah, it was that powerful because like I had never experienced anything
like that.
You know, like that. And it was just like, but that was what I wanted though. I'm not even going to lie. Like, mm-hmm. It was like out of anything else that I could have, it was just like instantly, that is what I want. I know that. You know?
And isn't that the common story with every addict? It's like an instant falling in love.
Yeah.
Whether it's meth, crack, opiates, alcohol, there's just this instant relationship that comes between you and that drug.
Definitely. I mean, I definitely think that. Cause
you married it.
Yeah, pretty much. It was
for
like,
better or for worse.
Yeah, and then it was like everything else didn't even matter anymore, honestly, you know. Like, I would choose, you know, the opiates over anything else any day after that, you know. It's like nothing else mattered other than that, you know. It's like if I had money or, you know, anything else left to get something else with, you know, then I might put it on there. But the main thing was, you know, I needed, because you can't really find, in my experience, you can't really find heroin around here.
Right.
So that wasn't a big thing to be able to try, but it was like, you know, you could find some OxyContin around
here. And that's pharmaceutical heroin.
Yeah, and so that was a big thing. It was like, above anything else, like, that's what I wanted to do. And
did you know at any level that you, breaking those down and snorting them and eventually shooting them, weren't you?
Yeah, eventually it led to that after about a year and a half, 2 years, you know.
Did you know you were in trouble, or did you rationalize it?
I mean, I didn't really do anything with it because, like, it came to the point, I mean, I was able to do it every day on a daily basis.
Because it was available.
Yeah, because it was
available.
But
did you at any level know that there was something very abnormal about that?
I didn't even think of it at the time.
So addicts just don't even stop to think of
it.
It's just like drinking water.
Yeah, it wasn't even a thought. It was just like,
it's what you do.
This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do, you know.
That's so hard for people that aren't addicted to understand, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's compulsion.
It's like, I mean, because most people are just like, well, why can't you just stop?
Right.
It's like, it's just not a thing. It's like,
it's not an option.
Yeah,
to stop.
You know, if you like drinking Mountain Dew every day, you know, you drink Mountain Dew every day. And,
right.
You know, it's so much more stronger than that in the brain and everything, that once it just gets a hold of you, it's just like someone constantly sitting in there saying, you need this, you need this, you need this.
The
know,
monkey on your
it.
Back, they used
exactly.
to call it.
Exactly, you know, and it's just, it's like, you know, you feel like you can't even start and go out and do anything throughout the day without being like, you know, I got to do this first. And it's a powerful thing. I'm not even going to lie.
Oh, for sure.
It's a very powerful
But when you started shooting it, did you know then?
That's when it started coming up, because it was like, I had been doing so much, you know, that I was like, you know, I'm spending so much money on this. And the same person that introduced me to it was the one also that introduced me. He's like, well, you know, you can, you know, if you start shooting it up, you know, it kicks in quicker and you get a better high off it, you know. And I'm like, cool, I'm all for that then, you know.
You were in it to win.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what got me started on that. And then it wasn't long after that to where, you know, I started realizing, like, when you start waking up sick and throwing up, and just because you don't, you know, you haven't done anything, like just waking up from the night before and it's already hit you like that. And so that's when I started being like, wow, you know, something's going on here. But, you know, it didn't stop me. Like, the way that I like to think of it, it's like, I mean, this is just my personal opinion, you know, on something, but it's, you know, whenever we're sick, we go to the doctor, or we do something, you know, that and we find a way to make us not sick, mm-hmm. you know? And the main thing that didn't make me sick anymore was doing more.
Sure.
You know, as crazy as
it was, your medicine.
Yeah, as crazy as it sounds, that's just how it was, like, programmed into my mind, you know? Instead of being like, you know, you're going through withdrawals, you just got to get through it. It's like, no, I'm sick. I need to take something to make me not sick anymore.
Which is everybody's natural instinct when they're uncomfortable.
Exactly.
To go get comfortable.
Exactly. And I think that was a big thing.
That feeds the addicted mind,
definitely. It definitely does. Because I kept thinking of it like that for a little while. And then it finally just got to a point, I'm just like, you know, for one, I'm spending so much money on this and I don't even know where I'm coming up with the money mm-hmm. half the time, you know? I mean, I'm just going somehow coming up with money. Like, you know, I could easily spend $200 to $300 a day and just don't even know where it came from. You know what I mean? Just out, you know, stealing stuff, just anything, you know? And it's horrible. I was like,
you were in hell and didn't even know how to get out.
It was like, it finally,
were you trying to do school too and all that? Or
well, after I went to USI for like a year and a half, and when I got kicked out of there was when all the, like, I mean, I'd been doing everything, you know, doing the oxygen stuff, but once I got kicked out of there is when, you know, the shooting up started and everything else. And then it's just like, there's no way I could even try, you know, I mean, like, I attempted but didn't come close, because it's like, you know, I have to be right here.
Your job was to get a fix.
Exactly, with the people that I know, and, you know,
hustling every day.
Exactly.
Wow, what a life.
It's like a thing every day to find those pills.
Yes.
That was the main thing, was to find a pill, an opiate of some sort.
And you were up to 300 milligrams at a time.
I mean,
unbelievable tolerance.
If the availability was there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, it's just, you know.
Isn't it amazing what the body can take and endure?
It is. Because, like, I can't even, you know, it's like when I first think about it, you know, I first started off and I did, you know, like 20 milligrams and was like, that was pretty powerful. And then I'm sitting there thinking about it, and like, I would do 20 milligrams near the end, and I'm like, I'm still sick, even. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not even doing anything.
Yeah.
That it's like, if I've got more, I'm going to do more and keep doing more.
Just to be normal.
No, yeah.
So you got in some legal trouble, a lot of stealing stuff in your history to survive, I guess. But is that when you then went and tried to get on methadone?
I gotten in a lot of legal trouble, and not a little bit. We'll go say I got
true.
In a lot of legal trouble.
Yeah.
And
not your typical just theft as a kid charge.
Yeah. Stolen credit card things, you know, drug charges throughout things. Just a lot of stuff started racking up on things, you know, and you know, the theft charges were related to, you know, having money to be able to keep going and getting high and everything. And it's like, you know, I'm just sitting here looking at all this, you know, realizing like, man, something's going on. Something has got to change in here, you know. And it was at a point, it was like, you know, I don't know what to do to change this, but I know that I need to change something, but I don't want to be sick while I'm trying to do this. You know, that's the main thing, is like, I don't want to be sick, you know, because waking up every morning just shaking and, you know,
sweating,
going, throwing and vomiting, it's just like, I don't want to go through that. And so, you know, of course, every, you know, opiate addict knows that, you know, you can go and get treatment base, I guess, as going through the methadone clinic, where they try to, you know, give you medication through the methadone to get you in a stable amount and get you leveled out, and then try to slowly bring you down off it so you don't have all the withdrawal symptoms and everything. And I was like, well, you know,
worth a try.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to go and try and do that, you know. And I mean, I can't say that didn't I mean, it helped me in some aspects. But like the main thing I say about it is, you know, it's like, that's just kind of treating one side of it, you know. You're treating the physical side of it, but you're not treating the mental side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing up in my brain changed about my thoughts and everything. But, you know, it kind of, it just normaled me out physically.
Took the edge off.
Yeah,
physically.
To where I, you know, I could have a job at least, mm-hmm. and, you know, start being able to do some things without, you know, constantly having this, you know, this urge and this craving. I got to go do this and do that, you know, to where, you know, I couldn't have a job. Cause,
so
you know,
it did take your craving away? The methadone or just got you physically comfortable?
It did. I mean, it made you pretty much feel like, once you got stabled out, feel pretty much just physically normal.
So then did you, once you got physically comfortable, did your brain start saying, maybe I can go out and do something else.
I mean, it came in there a little bit. Like, I was really trying, you know, it's like I was trying when I first started really hard to like try. And I was like, I've got to start doing something different, trying to do that. But yet there's always that thought in the background, too, of, you know, it's like, well, you know, I want to try and experiment with things and stuff, you know. And a big thing that, you know, is always told down there, you know, that you're not supposed to mix benzodiazepines, which is Xanax and stuff like that, with methadone because it can cause your heart to stop and kill you. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, you tell that to an addict and they're like, I can do what? Well, let me see if I can try this.
Make me curious.
See how that's going to work out. And so, you know, I kind of experimented with that in there a little bit, you know. It wasn't really a thing because, like, starting to do that's when I couldn't really function with things, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm trying to, like, get a job. I'm trying to, you know, do some normal things to get things straightened out. And so it's like, I mean, I tried it and, you know, had a little bit of issues with it. But, yeah, like I said, it's more of a thing, you know. It didn't clear up the mindset, you know, that
still wanting to get some relief.
I still want to get high. I still want to do something, you know what I mean? I don't necessarily know
it's
that
just
I
the
want
way
to
you're
do,
wired.
Yeah, it's like I don't necessarily know I want to do that, but I know that I want to do something to make me not feel the way I feel right now.
Right, right.
You know, it's like escape from all this. Because, I mean, thinking about it, you know, I'm sitting here looking at I don't even know how many years with multiple different court cases. You know, it's like I don't want to take the reality of it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you don't want to take
it's
the reality.
It's a lot of reality to swallow by the time you're done.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I hadn't really been pushed into adulthood either, to where it's like I got to have a job and pay for all my stuff, and I got all this that I got to deal with, and all this that I got to deal with, and instead of facing my problems, I just want to run from it and hide and not deal with any of it.
That's interesting.
It was like a big escape.
So there was a lot of psychological stuff too. So methadone took care of that opiate discomfort, but all that psychological need to that overwhelmedness that you have when you're young adult.
Yeah, the fact of, like, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to do, what I'm trying to accomplish here, goals, and not get anywhere, just keep getting setbacks after setbacks just from stupid things that I've done. It starts to, you know, you're just like, man, I just want to give up, you know, and just say, whatever, I don't want to deal with it. And
is that why you kept smoking pot while you were on the methadone clinic?
I mean, it was a thing.
Just
overwhelmed. It was an escape, you know, because, like, when you're high, you don't have to worry about anything, you know, that's not an issue anymore, you know.
Just worry about getting the next buzz.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, you can go throughout your whole day being high and not dealing with anything, wake up the next day, just do it all over again, and you don't have to deal with anything until it's right in front of your face, and then you're like, oh, what do I do now?
Right, right.
You know, so that's why I said, like, that was the main reason why I kept, you know, smoking weed throughout everything, was because it was like, you know, that was the main thing. That was the main fallback thing always. Mm-hmm. It was like, that was the thing that would always keep me, you know, out of having to deal with all the life stressors and everything else that I'm trying to deal with. And
wow. Listening to you, I can understand, you know, that, you get try to get clean and get your life back together, but the more reality that comes in, the more overwhelmed you are, because it's a lot of feeling like you have to catch up.
Yeah.
And you can't even get ahead.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm sitting there watching other people that, like, I graduated high school with, you know, go through college and start having jobs and start doing all this other things, and I'm just sitting here stuck going, well, what am I supposed to
do? In a jail cell or on methadone. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have to take a little break. Radio Rehab audience, don't go away. This is a very interesting interview, and don't hesitate to call if you have any questions, 424-1400, and we will be right back.
Stuff will make you want to see. Subs be the saddest bounties. April is National Car Care Month, so make your car sparkle this spring.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Cleaning your car inside and out is an important part of spring maintenance. You can protect your finish with the right wax and improve visibility by keeping windows and mirrors clean. Right now at AutoZone, get your choice of any Eagle One car care products for only $3.99. Limit 3. Make your car turn heads. Get to AutoZone today.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Mark, technician from SafeLight Auto Glass.
Torn up roads can cause big problems for windshields. My last customer ignored a small chip on his, drove over a pothole, and crack! If only he called us sooner. When it chips small, we can usually repair it in just a half hour with our state-of-the-art resin. A SafeLight repair is so reliable, we guarantee it for life. And with most insurance plans, there's no cost to you.
Call SafeLight at 1-800-800-2727.
SafeLight Repair, SafeLight Replace.
Hey, you. Yeah, you're listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
My car needs a sip of some smooth, clean, and refreshing high-quality motor oil, and I'm going to take it to Award-Winning Oil Change. At Award-Winning Oil Change, they take care of all my car's needs. For $20 on most vehicles, the mechanic will change the oil and inspect the car for safety and drivability issues for free. Isn't that awesome? I go there because they are very professional, and they have good service for good people at a great price. It's truly a one-stop shop. They're not the average oil change. They have a team of professional mechanics that take care of my suspension work, brakes, shocks, struts, and tune-ups. And why do I go to Award-Winning Oil Change located across from Deaconess Hospital at the corner of Harriet and Virginia? Pricing. They are the home of the $20 oil change, and that includes a free vehicle inspection. So stop clowning around and follow me to the best place in town. Award-Winning Oil Change. At the corner of Harriet in Virginia, or call them at 424-1992.
Hey, you. Yeah, you're listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
My car needs a sip of some smooth, clean, and refreshing high-quality motor oil, and I'm going to take it to Award-Winning Oil Change. At Award-Winning Oil Change, they take care of all my car's needs. For $20 on most vehicles, the mechanic will change the oil and inspect the car for safety and drivability issues for free. Isn't that awesome? I go there because they are very professional, and they have good service for good people at a great price. It's truly a one-stop shop. They're not the average oil change. They have a team of professional mechanics that take care of my suspension work, brakes, shocks, struts, and tune-ups. And why do I go to Award-Winning Oil Change located across from Deaconess Hospital at the corner of Harriet and Virginia? Pricing. They are the home of the $20 oil change, and that includes a free vehicle inspection. So stop clowning around and follow me to the best place in town. Award-Winning Oil Change at the corner of Harriet in Virginia, or call them at 424-1992.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Well, Hi, everybody. We're back still talking to Kenny, my 25-year-old guest that's already got 16 months clean and sober. We were talking about life in the methadone clinic and him trying to stay clean through marijuana maintenance. So let's get back to talking about how you hit bottom, Kenny, and how you started turning around and coming back up.
Yeah, the main thing that came up with it, you know, is like with all the legal issues that I had, you know, they finally had decided that, you know, I was going to get put on house arrest and that I was going to do that. And, you know, that's the way that they were going to let me, because I'd actually applied for drug court and tried to do all that and everything. But, of course, going to the methadone clinic, you know, you can't do that, obviously. And so they were finally like, well, my lawyer had worked it out to where I could get put on house arrest and still be able to go down and do all that and everything. But without really, you know, any sort of treatment and anything else to kind of help with it, you know, I still had all the old thoughts of that I can go out and do something. And, you know, here I am. I've been on house arrest for 5 days. And then all of a sudden, I'm going out on a job search looking for a job, thinking that I can go and, you know, steal stuff again like I used to. And, you know, these places that I had been going, apparently, you know, I've been hitting them enough that they were on to me. And so my first day out when I was on house arrest, you know, I get caught at a store trying to steal something and, you know, pretty much get tackled by their security team and get arrested that day while being on house arrest.
Wow.
And, you know, that didn't really sit over too well with everything. And, you know, that's kind of what led to me going to jail for, you know, about 8.5 months. And so I was in jail.
That's almost a year in jail.
Yeah, I was in jail for 8.5 months because with what I had going, you know, I had cases in two different counties, you
right.
know, trying to go back and forth to it and, you know, trying to get the two counties to agree upon something and everything, you know, working with it. And, you know, we tried to look at the options that we had for everything, you know, and, like you said, we finally came back and revisited, you know, the drug court idea through, obviously, the Vandenberg County had just plain flat out said that, you know, you'd already tried being on probation, you tried being on a house arrest program, you hadn't made it through anything, we're not really willing to accept you into anything, you know. And so that's when, you know, we came back and through, like, the main reason why, you know, before trying to get on house arrest was trying to get on drug court the first time,
mm-hmm.
but being denied for it because I was on methadone. And obviously, if you're incarcerated, you're not on anything anymore. So we went back and, you know, revisited that idea. And, you know, luckily I was granted the opportunity to be able to, you know, get into that program and start, you know, doing something different there. And
the drug court?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I've been in jail for, you know, about 8.5 months. And, you know, I finally get approved for all that and everything. And, you know, I get sent to rehab where I did their inpatient treatment at rehab for a little while. And then it was like, after I got out of that, it's like, you know, 9 months and, you know, I didn't really have anywhere to go, anything to do. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, you have no money.
Just nothing,
you know?
Going for you,
yeah.
Literally.
And so it's like, you know, the only place that I could really go and stay would be at my mom's house. And that really wasn't going to be a very good option because, you know, there's certain things that, you know, happened there that really just weren't going to be an option for me to be able to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd made the decision that, you know, after going through rehab and everything, they have a place to try and help people. You know, they get back on their feet, you know, called a halfway house for people that are, you know, trying to still get treatment, but yet, you know, start getting their life back on track and doing
it is
things.
Still treatment. It's yeah. extended treatment.
It definitely was, you know, I mean, I was still taking classes and everything else along with the,
right.
the sessions that they have for being able to be back there. And, you know, they try to, you know, push you to, you know, find a job and, you know, start being able to pay the rent that's due to
mm-hmm.
live back there and everything, you know, and they require you to go to meetings and do all that, you know, just trying to, you know, push you out and get you, you know, kind of orientated with everything along with helping you, you know, while you're doing it. And, I mean, it was very large for me. You know, I stayed there for 6 months, you know, after I had gotten out of jail, after I got done with the residential part of treatment. About, you know, a month later, I'd went out and gotten a job, you know, and without having a license or anything else, you know, I remember I used to walk about at least an hour every day just to get to like the buses to ride to and from work, you know.
You really were willing to go to any length.
Yeah, and then not only on top of that, it's like after you go to work, you know, I made sure I was like, I'm going to go out to meetings too. And, you know, it's like when I first got out, you know, and started out of treatment and everything, it's like I didn't know people or anything, you know.
A whole new life.
Yeah, and I didn't have a license, didn't have anything. So it was like I'd take the bus, I'd walk, you know, no matter what it was. It's like, you know, I made sure it was like, you know, I'm going to start getting to meetings, you know. It's like start learning where they're at. And I think that was a good thing, too, going through treatment was, you know, there's people there to talk to mm-hmm. kind of, you know, help ideas. Be like, hey, well, why don't you try going here? You know, it's not mm-hmm. that far away. You know, you catch the bus right out of here, you know, and try to, you know, I think that was very, I was very appreciative of that.
A lot of people coaching you.
Yeah, I had a lot of people there to kind of help, you know, more so than if I would have been at home. And
that's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely
for newly recovering people.
I think it was an orchestra of recovery going in both ears. I definitely think it was because it's like, you know, with me living there actually at like the treatment facility, you know, it's like I have, you know, constant availability to talk to someone when I got a problem. Or, you know, someone's like, oh, how's your day going? You know, you know, making sure that, you know, everything's going all right and everything. And that, you know, they clearly could tell that I was getting off, you know, doing what I was supposed to and heading off on the right path. And, you know, they're there to help me and kind of guide me, you know.
We really need more halfway house opportunities in this community.
I don't think there's enough transitional housing for people. For males, I think the female side of it is very. I think
just
they have,
the why, really.
Yeah, I think. I mean, they
we
at least
more.
Have something. Though,
yes,
you know, that there is something there for you know most guys coming straight out of treatment or you know out of jail that don't have anywhere to go. There's not really a lot of you know recovery.
That's true, and you can only go to Stepping Stone if you've gone through treatment there.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah. And I mean,
so did you get involved then in the 12-step programs? You're pretty active in NA, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I went to meetings and everything. You know, I was when I first got out, I was avid every day, you know, meeting, like they say, you know, just to get acquainted with everybody, you know, start to meet the people, like they say, you know, it was more of I was finally open to suggestions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm finally listening and taking it in mm-hmm. and doing it because, you know, I'd gone through, you know, some of the lesser rehabs. Through everything, trying with some of the court cases, you know, like when you get them put on probation, they're like, well, you need to go and do this, you know, and just kind of BS'd my way through it. And it wasn't really till like I wanted to do something different and wanted to change on it that I finally started, you know, actually listening to what people are saying and trying mm-hmm. to be like, well, look, maybe I can do this and, you know, I can do something different and go this way instead.
So was jail was your first real wake-up call and more than just a week or two in jail.
Yeah,
and then the halfway house and treatment, was that kind of your next turning point?
I think that was a big step in what I was doing, you know, because, I mean, without that opportunity, you know, I don't know where I would have mm-hmm. been, you know, because it's a lot, you know, a lot of more supervision so than normal, you know, I mean, just constant. And the thing with living there, too, it's recovery-based.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like it's
like a boarding school.
It's kind of driven. You know, that's the 24 hours, you know, that, you know, when you're up, it's like, hey, you know, you see this and, you know, you can see all these other people, you know, coming in and out and just leaving. And you don't ever know what happened to them because you don't see them anymore. It's kind of, you know, a good awakening being like, hey, you know, that can be me real easy, mm-hmm. but, you know, this is helping me to do something different right now.
Yeah, people say, I don't want to go there. I'll get brainwashed. And we always say, well, maybe your brain needs a good washing.
Yeah.
For sure.
I can agree with that. I mean,
so then you got out of there and now you're in school and still going to NA meetings regularly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go to as many as I used to, you know, with finding time between school and everything else. Like, you know, at first it's like without having a job and anything else, you know, I don't have anything else to do. That's
right.
Not, you know, my thing is that was my main focus, you know. And then once you start, you know, getting some things together and everything, you know, it's like, you know, you do have life responsibilities that you have to start coming off of. But you have to also remember, you know, where you came mm-hmm. from and make sure and keep a solid base in it, you know. I mean, I like going to meetings. You know, I have lots of friends that I have at meetings and
right.
stuff. Right. You know? Like,
where are the NA meetings that
There's a lot of meetings.
Recommend our audience to try.
I mean,
is there an NA meeting tonight somewhere?
What's tonight? There's a
Saturday.
Yeah, there's a Saturday night live meeting. I honestly cannot tell you. It's at a church on the west side. I could not exactly tell you what the church is and the exact location because I'm not
Well,
exactly
I think
sure
people can Google Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah, if you Google Narcotics Anonymous and you can find the area that we live in for our region is called Across the Rivers area, and it'll bring up a meeting sheet, I'm pretty sure, on a website that we have made up that shows you where the meetings are at, what times they are every day of the week. And, you know, not only in Evansville area, but they have them for the surrounding, the closer areas around here, you know, so there's definitely...
So people can find a Narcotics Anonymous
meeting.
You
can definitely do that. And, you know, here in Evansville also, if you're in Evansville, you know, I would call Stepping Stone. They can easily point you in a direction that can get you to a meeting. You know, they have meeting sheets available there. They have, you know, they can point you in the right direction if you need to, you know.
And their number's 473-3144. So if you want to find a Narcotics Anonymous meeting or Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, you're right, Stepping Stone would be...
Yeah, they have a lot of everything else for that there too, you know. I mean, it's just me personally, you know, when I came out into recovery, you know, I found, you know, my spot where I felt like I fit in, where I belonged, was in Narcotics Anonymous. And that's why those are the meetings that I go to, because I feel like that's where I best relate with everyone, you know. And
it's the same 12 steps as Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine's Anonymous.
You do the same things, just with, you know, a little bit of differences in the programs, you know. And it's just really...
A lot of the F word at those NA meetings. The F bomb gets a lot more young people, maybe too.
I mean,
in NA.
There's because I've gone out to AA meetings too. You know, I don't try to be closed-minded about it. You
right,
know?
It's like, good.
It's like I'm not. To me, a meeting is a meeting.
Yes.
You know, you get from a meeting what you want out of it. You know, regardless of what it is. You know. It's just for me where I felt most comfortable and where I felt like, you know, I wanted to do and be was through the NA meetings that I went to, you know. And it's like, I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, because I do go to some AA meetings too. So it's just really, you know, like they say, if you're not sure, just go to everything until
keep shopping around.
Yeah,
exactly.
Until you find where you fit in, because you'll eventually find where you fit in. You know?
So do you ever have a desire to have a drink or a joint or a pill?
I mean, that's always an issue, you know, that's never going to go away, you know, but the thing is to be able to have the tools to combat it, you know, and, you know, what I've learned, you know, to call and talk to people and to, you know, realize what you're going and what you're doing and the issues that come up with it, you know, and work with other people in recovery, you know, like, because the thing that, you know, if you try to do it on your own, you know, I've seen where that got me.
Yeah.
You know, I kept going in circles and didn't do anything, you know.
Us alone are in bad company.
Exactly. And it's like once I was finally opened my mind up enough to realize that I need help and to accept other people and to help me, that's a big thing, you know. And I always have to remember that, you know, regardless, I can't do this alone, you know, but there are people out there to help me. I just have to, you know, open my mouth, you know, because nobody's going to open it for me or just come up and know what's going on inside of my head, you know. Nobody's
why is it so hard to ask for help?
It's just, you know, at one point you just have to take your pride and suck it up and be like, look, you know, this is my life I'm talking about here. Do I want to keep going on this road and getting these same results that I have, or do I want to make a difference in what I'm doing, you know? And, you know, it finally came to me to the point, you know, I was like, I don't want to be in jail the rest of my life, you know? I was told there's only three outcomes, jails, institutions, or death. And I was like, well, I've been to jail, I've been to an institution, you know, there's not really much of a choice that's going to come left, you know, I'm going to end up in one of those permanently, and I don't want that. So it's like I knew I needed to make a change about something and do something different.
You have they say willingness is the key.
Yeah, definitely.
You had the willingness.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the big thing. Like I say, you know, you just got to be willing to do something different. You know, find out that there is a life out there besides what you've been doing, you know. And, you know, regardless if you don't think you can do it, I mean, if you put your mind to it, you can succeed and do whatever you want, you know. And that was the big thing.
Could anybody have intervened on you earlier? Because, you know, we do a lot of stuff in the schools, educating. And they're having a lot of problems with these pills now in the schools. Would anybody have been able to say anything to you?
It's not really a thing until you come to a conclusion that you have a problem and you need to do something different about it. You know, I think it pushes people even more when people are like, you don't need to do this, you don't need to do this. And you're like...
Makes it more curious.
The way I think the younger generation, more rebellious and stuff, it's like, you're telling me I can't do that? Well, I'm going to do it anyway then, and just, you're going to get over it.
Well, all the research is showing that's not the approach anymore. The just say no didn't work.
Yeah.
That we need to give people facts, and then they have to make up their own mind.
And I think a big thing is, you know, education is definitely a key. And then also, you know, people like me to be able to be like, you know, look, you know, you can see, you know, because I had the opportunity one time to speak to a young adult group.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there and told them, I was like, look, you know, I can tell you my story and tell you where I ended up, you know, and you can keep going on the path that you're going and you can just keep, you know, continuing on the road like I did or make it even worse. Or you can make a change now before it gets too late and you don't have to go through all that I go to.
Right.
I was like, I'm sure everyone here can relate or identify with something that I have said in here and be able to pick it up and be like, yeah, I did that. Do I want to keep doing what he did and keep getting, you know, because those are the results I'm going to get, you know, it's proven.
Yes.
And so it's like, you know, I can share with you and tell you, you know, this is what I have done. Do you want to do that or do you want to try to make a change now and do something different?
So you can get off the elevator at any floor. You don't have to go down as far as you did.
Exactly. It's like, you know, regardless, you know, if you've got a problem, you know, it's like eventually you have to face it. And, you know, if me sharing and telling you what's happened to me and you can see yourself from the start of it, why do you want to end up all the way that I did? Why not stop before it gets that bad and change and start making a difference in your thing?
Do you think our community, we hear a lot about meth and the jail cells are full of meth and crack cocaine. Alcohol too. Do you think opiates are coming right up there too?
I mean, that's kind of tough to judge. You know,
it's hard to.
As for when I was in jail and stuff, like you said, like I mean, I definitely think the methamphetamine problem is a lot bigger than anything else. And, and you know, the cocaine and that too. It falls right along with it. I think, you know, those still kind of outweigh more of what you're going to see than, you know, as far as, I mean, I do credit that they're, you know, prescription pills are starting to become an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's documented in various things, you know, because, I mean, I've heard, you know, you can do research on the internet and find these statistics on it that that's coming up too. But I still think those things really outweigh a lot more than all the others.
Well, were there a lot of people at the methadone clinic when you went too?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people there, and the thing with that is they bring in a lot of people from larger areas, you know, because that availability, you know, that the, from what I remember, the other closest methadone clinic that you can go to, there's one in Indianapolis, and then there's one in, like, Paducah, Kentucky, and down by Louisville. So it's like there's a very large area where they bring people into, and it's like, yeah, I mean, I see that there's a lot of people there, and, like, I know there's people from around this area and stuff. I just, I kind of, you know, I think...
It's a... horse of a different color.
Yeah,
it really
I think it's just a different nature of things.
And
you know?
Get them prescribed, so there's you don't have to go in the streets and cook it in labs or buy.
Exactly. I think that's a different thing that it's, you know, there's not a lot of regulations and ways to be able to check and make sure that people that are prescribed medications are taking them the right way and stuff without infringing on their rights.
Yes.
You know, so that's a difficult balance that it's hard to find.
For sure. Well, we're at the end of our hour. This has been so fascinating. Is there anything in closing, Kenny, you would want to say to people out there that might have family members or themselves that need to find a place to get better? Should they go?
I mean, the only thing, you know, I can say is, you know, you have to, anybody has to be willing first to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, there's treatment facilities around here. You know, there's various different ones. You know, if you really want help, you will find help. You know, if you really want to, you know, get to meetings and get involved and do something different with your life, you will do that. And, you know, that's what I suggest to people. You know, I mean, meetings made a huge impact on my life.
So find a meeting. It's free.
It is. It's free, and there's coffee there.
Yeah, there's coffee.
And there's coffee at every meeting.
Awesome people to meet and hear their stories.
It definitely is. There's a lot of good people that were willing to help that have been on the, you know, whether you think you're unique, there's somebody that has you can
been
tie
there.
Into that
Absolutely.
You know you will relate with that is willing to help and willing to, you know, get you out of what you're in and you know, show you a better way of life and help you with it.
And if you're like Kenny and just have legal charges out the wazoo that you think you'll never get out of the Gray Bar Hotel, to use the system, use the judicial system to help yourself. Go get in a drug court or talk to your judge or your attorney about getting in a therapeutic setting, because it sounds like with Kenny, even though he got clean physically, he still had a lot of psychological and emotional stuff that you needed to take care of.
Yeah,
and treatment helps with that.
Yeah, with treatment and, you know, more supervision that was really required, you know, to get the time away from everything and get a good foundation built up definitely helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I say that was a very big factor in it, you know, having, you know, a solid foundation to step out onto to make sure that I can make it, you know, that's definitely helped me.
Well, that's what's made the drug court so successful. That nudge from the judge and that monitoring.
It is. I mean, definitely, because, you know, with... And then it's too, like you say, you know, you get into a routine of things,
mm-hmm.
you know, you go into meetings, doing what you're supposed to, doing the right things, you know, you start working, you know, like me, going to school, you know, it's like I have a routine now, you know, it's like I go to school, you know, try to get to a meeting when I'm not too busy, you know, I make sure, and also still though, that keep a focus that, you know, I have to start remembering that, you know, everything else that I've achieved, I won't come if I don't keep with where I started from. So that's why I keep trying to, you know, make sure and make it to meetings and try to keep in touch and keep a base going with it.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming. Not
no
feeling
problem.
Good.
Yeah.
We'll have to have you back.
For sure.
Well, it is 12:30. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope this was helpful. It certainly was for me. I keep learning every day and want to share it and hope you want to share too. If you want to write to Radio Rehab, you can go to radiorehab@yahoo.com. And in the middle of the week, Kenny will be on the World Wide Web, www.lisaseifcares.net, and then just hit podcast and you can hear this interview on the internet as well. It's a beautiful day out there. Go enjoy all the people you love, your clean and sober day. And
go to a meeting.
And get to a meeting, for sure. And between now and next Saturday, don't forget to do the next right thing.